This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am with my co-host, the co-hostest with the mostest slides, that is. It's Jon.
I was almost thinking he's done that intro before, but no, he had the slides thing, so he is up to snuff again. Modern, new, no screws loose on this guy.
Well, we'll see. Screws may come loose later on in the episode.
Anywho, we're back with a continuation of last time, which is a very logical thing to say.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
And you're not going to say anything. Okay, fair enough. No. I've made slides, so as last time, we'll be talking about the state of open source. And we've explained last time why I made some special slides to be able to compare, contrast, and ridicule past versus present. So if you're not on YouTube for this one, you might be missing out on some stuff because we will be showing nice, colorful graphs in very ugly slides. That's how it works, right?
Something like that. Something like that. Yeah, so let's dive in. And this next one is essentially reasons for organizations using open source software. And
things have changed.
Maybe unsurprisingly, maybe surprisingly, it's up to your interpretation and maybe a bit of our interpretation. But the biggest change is that last year, the top reason was access to innovations and the latest technologies at 37%. And this year, the top reason at 36% is no license cost, overall cost reduction.
Yeah.
Surprising? Not surprising?
Well, I think I'm going to go back to the reason I gave on the last episode as well, being the pandemic. So in the previous years, people are scrambling to get stuff working and getting open source installed is easy, fast, if you have the people who know what they're doing and to do. With the pandemic being over, there's less need to scramble for new things to make things work better, faster, ish. And license cost is returning as the main reason to buy open source or to get open source, I shouldn't say buy. Mm-hmm. However, I'm going to contradict myself before you do it. In earlier years, license cost was never the top reason to get open source. It always was more the innovation part. And sure, license cost was a factor, but it was never the biggest factor either. Mm. So maybe it's just that we're in a bit of an economic slump at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's very much it. The no license cost, overall cost reduction was kind of down in the sort of bottom third of results last time round. The fact that it's right at the top this time does feel that it's perhaps more aligned to the economic downturn that people would have been starting to feel as the this survey was going on. So I think that's probably more of it. But I don't really see, like, there's a few things that have kind of jumped around a little bit in terms of the order, but not significantly. That, to me, like, reducing vendor lock-in is like in the top half, whereas last time it was just in the bottom half. But none of these things,
pretty much the same.
Yeah,
higher last year.
Yeah, but none of these things really, I don't think, have moved around that much. So I think the only notable point for this one is the previously it was all about access to innovations, the latest technologies, and now, surprise, surprise, economic downturns see people focusing on license cost and cost reduction. And for my sins, I've been involved in open source based solutions, technologies, and companies for well over 20 years. And I can safely say, like, every single economic downturn or financial crisis or whatever that I've been a part of an open source based organization, that has always been some of the times where that organization has grown the fastest and has had some of the most accelerated success. And we all know that open source isn't necessarily cheap. It depends on how you think about your costs. But certainly there are situations where it can be significantly more cost effective than its counterparts in some cases. So it doesn't surprise me, given the sort of the situation that this survey was taken in, which would have been the start of the economic downturn, and certainly, you know, fuel crisis and sort of uncertainty around that. So yeah, I think everything else here looks pretty normal.
Yeah, on the other hand, OSS adoption didn't grow more than last year. I mean, last episode we looked at more adoption, less adoption. That was pretty much stable. So This would mean that people that are already using OSS kept using OSS for overall cost reduction.
Mm.
And that actually does kind of make sense, because I mean, am I right when I think that when you adopt open source, it's a bit of a big cost to get started, because you probably need to get a higher, better trained people who are more creative, innovative. You have to jump to some hoops to make everything work nicely. But once it's there, once it's running and you did it the right way, there is no annual license costs. There is no recurring cost coming up. The people, yeah, you still need to pay them, but well, you have to pay employees, whatever you do, that doesn't make big of a difference. So while adoption might be a bit more costly with open source, because you kind of have to invest not just in the product, but also in the knowledge around the product, once it's there, it kind of keeps giving you dividends in less expenses. And in that, if I look at that that way, then it makes sense that in the previous years, innovation, latest technology was important. So it costs what it costs. We need this innovation. We need to do this, so we'll pay for it. Mm-hmm. And now it's there. Well, why would we chunk it away? If we replace it by something commercial, it's going to cost us more. So yeah, why do we keep it? Cost reduction.
Could be.
Anything else that I think is weird in that list? I don't think so. I mean, the reduced vendor lock-in is always a bit of a double-edged one, because on the one hand, I see what they mean. On the other hand, it's just another kind of lock-in, because once you go for open source, you get addicted to that one too.
Mm-hmm.
So typically these days, it's not that much vendor locking anymore, but technology lock-in, if you like. If you choose to go the SQL path, then you'll probably stay SQL for the next couple of decades. If you go no SQL path, you'll probably stay that way. Luckily, most people go both ways, so you're not entirely locked in. But I think the big vendors that actually lived on vendor lock-in are starting to feel that that's not the right business path anymore.
Yeah, makes sense.
So they're also kind of backing away from that a little bit. Fast-moving constant enhancements, releases, and patches. Yeah, that's a fun one. I remember now. This is one of the reasons to go for OSS, but later in the episodes, we're going to be talking about the problems that come with open source, and this also figures there. So does it just mean that open source people don't know what they need or want?
Who knows?
And finally, for me, the makes it easy to hire or retain employees. Does that make sense for you? I mean, it's at the bottom of the list, so it's not the highest one, but still 6-5%.
I think it does make sense. And the reason for that is that typically folks that are interested by open source are very passionate about it and very excited about it and love working with it. And so like those folks that are wired that way, generally speaking, you know, if you've got more investment in open source, then they'll be more excited to work even more and deploy even more and get even more done.
Agree. That's part of retain employees. And I agree. I mean, if you build something yourself with your bare naked hands, you're proud of the thing and you want to keep it alive, it's your baby and you're involved with it. But easier to hire, I mean, is it a myth that it's hard to find good open source people then?
I think it's getting easier. I think that open source is becoming a lot more prevalent in education and in it's becoming a lot better understood by people that open source is a useful business or useful skill to have for business. So I do think it's getting easier. I think the days, I'm not sure about whether the days of, you know, skill shortages are numbered, because I think the skill shortages are still there because more and more organizations are adopting more and more open source. So I still don't think it's we're at the point where we've got this glut of open source folks waiting for the next round of jobs to open. Like, I don't think that's the case at all. But I do think it's getting easier because I think there's more people that have got open source on their CVs and in their skill sets that are now coming into the workforce.
Can I go on a tangent?
Sure.
Because I, by coincidence, saw something, I think it was on YouTube earlier this week, where NVIDIA's CEO Jensen was talking about what people should be studying in school today to be ready for the future. And, well, for those who don't know, NVIDIA is kind of high, big on the whole ML, Gen AI kind of hype train. So what he said was that we shouldn't train our young people in development, programming, or stuff like that anymore, because Gen AI will do that for them. We need to train them in domain knowledge on specific whatever they're doing, manufacturing, retail, medicine, whatever. I got my reaction to that, but you first. What do you think?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. And the reason I don't know is because every time I start to get suspicious that, not sure about the hype of Gen AI is quite going to get us to that next level, something else comes out that just completely blows my mind. So the recent
Sora,
I think so. Yeah, from the recent, like, you know, here's a text prompt, and then I think like 60 seconds later, here's a 60-second video clip that looks, you know, amazingly realistic, if that's the look that you're going for, or, you know, just with very, very few hallucinations or artifacts. I mean, that only, not even two years ago, we were amazed when things like Midjourney and DALL-E popped up, where you could provide a text input and get a single or a set of four still images. And now, you know, less than 2 years later, we've got provide a text prompt and get, you know, a 60-second video clip that looks absolutely stunning. So I don't know. Like, the thing that I consistently come back to, though, is that we're automating the things that are more. We're automating the things that are more difficult in some cases, and we're not automating the things that should be easier. I don't see a lot of automation yet. But, you know, we have Copilot and, you know, all these sorts of things, and but I don't see that much work happening in the total automation of code side of things yet. But again, like, maybe that's a few months around the corner. Someone will release something where I can say, create a Python program that will, you know, search for all these file names, or search for the metadata in these images, rename the images to respect the file name, and move them into a directory structure that looks like this, and maybe that will be something doable. But
you can already pretty much do that, and through retrieval managed generation, you can actually make it look up your actual database schema and use the exact field names that are required to make the whole thing work, provided, of course, that you don't mind sending the schema of your databases to the internet. But that's a privacy thing. Let's not go there at the moment. Yeah. But technology-wise, that's already possible. And the thing with the co-pilots, particularly from Microsoft then, but Google has also their co-pilots. They're now called Gemini, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Their naming changes every 5 minutes. The thing is that those products stay the same, but the LLMs behind it evolve. So they used to be powered by ChatGPT-3, now they're powered by ChatGPT-4, so they improve all the time as well. The problem that I'm seeing in my environment is not actually the technology of generating the stuff that is not satisfactory, because that is getting better. It's more the copyright issues, because as it's being trained on public data, Now you could have code being generated that is copyrighted by someone somewhere. And for that reason, I see a lot of bigger software companies prohibiting the use of any kind of copilot. Now, Google and Microsoft has said that they will cover any costs of copyrights, but yeah, I mean, do you really want to go there?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the... No, it's not the same at all, but it's similar to the early days of people being concerned about lawsuits with open source software, and you know, all the big vendors provide indemnity against kind of IP related lawsuits, and have done for many years at this point. And you know, largely that has kind of vanished into obscurity. So maybe that's the thing. It is different, you're right, but like the other angle for a lot of this is going to be that those big organizations will pivot towards, you know, more local running, locally trained, you know, the models will be the same, but they'll be trained on their own corporate data and that sort of thing. Like there has to be some element of that for large corporations, because there are a lot of organizations that won't train stuff, won't trust stuff that's been trained on public data. But that significantly reduces the training data size, which therefore significantly impacts the usefulness of the model. So I don't think that there's an easy answer to this yet, but there's a fairly significant set of compromises if you go down that route.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to close on the tangent, I'll just give my view on Jensen's idea that we shouldn't be training programmers anymore. I think he's totally wrong, because GenAI will always create stereotypes. It's been trained on averaged data, which becomes stereotypical, because that's what the stereotype is, the stuff that most people think of when you say blah.
Yeah,
where people will excel should be creativity, yeah, innovation, new, yeah, things. And if you look at Sora, yeah, they're beautiful movies. They're well made. They evoke absolutely no emotion compared to what a human can do.
Maybe.
Okay, maybe I'm being a bit hyperbolic there, but that's where I think the difference should remain. The things that are just publicity ads, stuff like that, yeah, let the computer make that. I mean, the things that are running on the billboards in the train stations, who cares? Mm-hmm. Nobody looks at that for more than 3 seconds anyway. Do you really want to have a person spend like 3 weeks on building that thing?
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're making a cinematic movie.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The only thing that I would say is, and this I think is the argument for a lot of, you know, Copilot, stuff like that, is, and again, I've said this many times, I'm not a developer. In fact, I'm probably world's worst developer. But
you can't be both. You can't be not and the worst. It's one or the other.
Okay, well, maybe I am. Maybe that's the thing. Right. Anyway, so what I was thinking is there much like the way that Copilot works today. Is there an argument for coming up with a text prompt for, you know, what you've been asked to do, hitting go on that, and then, you know, 30 seconds, a minute later, up pops, you know, an entire project full of a whole load of code. And then the super duper smart people that are still very much trained in programming and excel at what they do can then go in and, you know, optimize it. Like, is, again, I'm not a developer / the world's worst developer. Mm-hmm. Like, is that an angle that does make sense? Or like, should you just write something with the optimizations in the first place and not go down that route? Like, is that a thing?
Absolutely. And even worse than that, when I went to school many decades ago, that was already the thing. The difference is, well, we're talking about boilerplating, templating. And everybody who's written code after the 1990s, what you did is, you used to go to Visual Studio from Microsoft and say, I want an XYZ kind of thing, and it built kind of the project for you with templating, and then you filled in the blanks. The difference is that the templates get more elaborate and more fit for purpose, is that the right word? Customized for, you get to really narrow down granularly, this is the, it's not just a web app, it's a web app for blah, blah, blah. So it get, that gets better. And then that's what the Copilot does today. It gives you that template, and then the person starts putting in the stuff that is unique, that is different. And that makes total sense. And I don't think that will ever change. Yes, the templates will get better, even better in the future. But if you really need a program that you can just let ChatGPT write, then you're doing something stupid, because that means somebody already made that and you should just buy that program. What could happen here at some point, that's maybe perhaps a nice one, is that expensive software becomes less expensive. And I'm thinking, okay, when I'm thinking about expensive software as a person, I'm thinking of one brand being Adobe. I love Photoshop. I don't pay for a Creative Cloud. I actually banished all Adobe software from my systems a couple of weeks ago. At the moment, they can charge that kind of money because they have some very unique things in their software stack. At some point, Copilot kind of stuff will be able to replicate to a reasonable degree what they have built. Clones will pop up. Of course, the copyright issue angle, we talked about that before already. But at some point, either Adobe will have to innovate really, really fast, and they're not innovating that much anymore at the moment, they're just jumping on the Gen AI hype train like anybody else. But either will do that, or they will have to compete with a lot of equally good or more or less equally good stuff that's way less expensive. So their pricing structure should change at that point. And the things that I found to replace Adobe with, I'm not going to mention them because we don't sponsor stuff and whatever, but look it up, Google or Bing, Photoshop replacement, you'll probably find them. I've been using them for a couple of weeks now. And yeah, it's not the same. And there's some things missing, but the difference in spend is ginormous.
Yeah, indeed. Well, with the... with my phone bingly binging, because once again, I forgot to put it on Do Not Disturb for the second episode in a row. Sorry.
Three strikes, you're out.
I think, unless there's anything else from you.
No, I'm totally fine. And since you did the intro, I can say that that is all the time you have for today. Yet again. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Contributions help us keep this very useful stuff in the air, even if we do tangents and we end up with an episode that has nothing to do with the title anymore. We are on YouTube, and especially for these kinds of episodes, it's good to go there. And when you're there, just do the like, subscribe, notification bell thingy. That makes us happy as well. You can go to www.roynelson.org. There's links to the Patreon page, YouTube page, other information about the podcast. And if you have feedback about what we're doing today, please send it by email to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Let us know how we're doing and how we can improve. Or if we're perfect, tell us that too. Miracles happen. Until next time, my name is Unequaled Jon.
And my name is Not a Developer Dave.
And we look forward to talking to you again next week and telling Dave that he is a developer. If he's a bad developer, he is a developer, because that's how it works.
Nope. See you then.